we investigate these things, and if we find something wrong, let's do something about it. You know, when I go back to see my in-laws at Easter, I know they're going to be saying, Keith, can you do something about drug prices? So I think that's why the office's position is to say we should do something about this now.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in the body of the bill, and maybe you or one of your associates can answer this, but it seems a little clear in terms of what's going on in these bills. It seems to be say that for every drug with a price of $80 or more per month that increases more than 15% in a 12-month period, that's unconscionable. But until it's proven conscionable and therefore illegal, how many drugs does your office estimate that will encompass? And, you know, because that does have an impact on the fiscal note.
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, we, in our research in preparing the fiscal note, we estimated approximately 15 investigations per year.
Representative Albright.
And Chair Nelson, thank you, and Mr. Kennedy.
This is Mr. Smith.
Sorry, Mr. Smith. I haven't had my second quarter coffee this morning. And you can appreciate that. You and I are like mine on that. So when you're dealing with an investigation, is each investigation similar in scope and practice, or are, when you talk about 15 investigations, can you walk me through what an investigation of that nature would entail?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, let me backtrack a little bit. Before I became finance director in 2012, I was an economist with the office investigating these types of financial matters in the utility antitrust area. And my way of thinking of it as an investigator, generally for the office, based on my experience, is, you know, you could have investigations that are related to, let's say, two different drugs that cover different things. You know, one is insulin and one is a cancer treatment. Those would be more different than if you were looking at an investigation of insulin from three different manufacturers. And so some of them could be very similar, some of them could be different.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is the unconscionable aspect or the investigation itself relevant to the dollar value of a drug or the percentage increase? Because if a drug is 40 cents and it goes up by 100%, now it's 80 cents, versus one that's at $200 and goes to $350, where is the discernment in terms of, because when you deal with the name, with the word unconscionable, it's a very subjective situation. So what determines from a legal aspect what is unconscionable, you know, moving from 40 cents to 80 cents or from 200 to 350?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Olson, Representative Albright, again, and I go back to my role as an investigator in the utility area. In that area, the law that the legislature passed said something like rates must be reasonable and affordable. And then what happens when you go into the investigation is you look at the facts and then you bring that before a decision maker where it's adjudicated. So based on the law you ultimately pass and the facts that come out in our investigation, that's what determines what the outcome is.
So Mr. Smith, so if I'm hearing this right, so in the example that Representative Albright gave, if one goes up from three to 450, and there's a huge increase in your investigation, find there's a huge increase in the baseline costs of what goes into the drug, that it may be justified for that increase, where the 20 to 40 cents might just be profit taking. I mean, when your investigation comes, so there'd be differences in what you investigate, what your results would be.
Chair Olson, I think that's correct.
Representative Albright.
So that begs the question, are you doing an initial response to every inquiry, or are you making a judgment in terms of, no, that one's reasonable, that one is fair or fairer, as opposed to others that seem more on the egregious side, or are you just going to undertake an investigation relevant to every concern that is delivered to your office?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, for purposes of this fiscal note, we've estimated 15 cases. As you know, we don't know what the drug prices are going to be 3 months down the road, presumably when this law takes effect. If the deterrence effect of your law gets drug prices down where they should be, the number could be lower. But if it doesn't, maybe the number could be higher. We're predicting 15 for purposes of this fiscal note.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. So in a sense, you're going to receive those notifications of inquiry from either the Board of Pharmacy or the Department of Human Services, as the language in the bill states. So you're not going to undertake those directly from anyone other than from agencies themselves. Is that a correct assumption?
Mr. Smith.
Or presumption?
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, I don't know how the details on that particular part of where the 15 come from.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the body of the bill, there is a section for effective date where it also talks about that there is a retroactive review going back to July 1st of 2014. And so in the context of the 15 requests that are going to be sent to your office, that seems a little bit nebulous in terms of picking and choosing winners on the percentages. It almost looks like there's a targeted effort underway in the bill towards certain drugs. Would that be an impression that you would hold as well?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, from my perspective, I've not seen, you know, any detail of saying what those 15 drugs would be. Obviously, I hear the same stories in the news that you hear about, you know, drug prices and the events that it's had on impacting the ability of people to afford their lives. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, that those are the type of drugs that are brought to us, but I don't know what will be brought to us.
And Mr. Smith, I know you heard on the radio this morning, and I think I heard it last night's news too, also talking about an insulin manufacturer capping their prices and actually lowering their prices going forward. So I don't. Maybe they realize that their people are looking at that at a rate that they're trying to do the right thing before they get hauled into court on something.
Yes, I hope so as well.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, so using the analogy of 15 per year, would it be fair to say that if we're going back, you know, 5 years, that could include not only 15 in every subsequent year going forward, but actually another 75 from the five previous years? Would that be the presumption that you might have to undertake that many investigations all at once?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, again, I think, as I said in my opening remarks, is our philosophy on fiscal notes is to, you know, provide a good faith estimate of what the estimates are of the net costs of doing these sorts of things. And as someone who's been doing forecasting for quite a while, I know the perils of forecasting, and you know, from my perspective, what makes me happy with a forecast is when some people say it's too high and some people say it's too low. If everyone says it's wrong in the same direction, that makes me more nervous. I'm definitely willing to say that this is speculative, but it's our good faith estimate of where we think it's going to be.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Just a couple more questions at this point. So when you prepared this fiscal note, and in an understanding in terms of how you put the budget together for the AG's office separately, was there any inclination to absorb or consider the what-if scenarios under either House File 6 or House File 4 in your normative budget or how do you bifurcate the responsibilities with those two versus your normative budget, understanding that if they're not into law, you don't need them, or you don't need the additional support staff. But was there any inclination to, you know, well, some of this might be taken care of by what our ordinary budget would be, but this is separate, distinct.
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright. In terms of our overall budget submission, you know, as we discussed in the previous two times I've been here, we put in two change items. One was to add full-time equivalents to provide additional assistance to rural county attorneys. That, by definition, isn't going to cover this. And then our second change item was to stop the gap growing between what we're compensating our attorneys relative to other public law firms, Ramsey, Hennepin County, et cetera. That change item, no FTEs, keeping exactly the same staff we have, just keeping the gap from growing anymore. And those are the two change items that, that this committee has funded. Again, thank you. And so we did not put in additional FTEs in our budget submission for either of these areas of enforcement in our initial submission.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You were speaking a little bit to the process that you would go through with the court in determining the reasonableness of a plan. The unconscionable price is defined in statute as not reasonably justified, and then lists factors that could justify it. So you mentioned in other contexts these types of decisions are made by courts. Do you think this is something that the courts are well equipped to assess?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Long. Yes, I think that's what courts do on a daily basis, is interpret the law and the facts that are presented to them in these sorts of matters.
Representative Long.
And for the investigations that the Attorney General's office would be doing, so you mentioned there'll be in the fiscal note there are 15 listed. Presumably, at some point, some of those investigations, what you would determine, they were justified. It wasn't unconscionable, and so you wouldn't need to take it through to the end. Can you talk a little bit about how some of those investigations might proceed and what assumptions might be about which ones would go to trial versus which ones would, you know, you'd find were justified?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Long, I don't know that we went into that great of detail in our assumptions, breaking it down. I think if all 15 investigations went to trial, we would have been putting in a higher fiscal note. So like you said at the beginning, we're assuming that not all of them will.
Right.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the process then, as I understand it in the bill, is that there's essentially a red flag that's raised for the Attorney General. If there's a rate increase of 15% or more, you will investigate it. You'll only take an enforcement action if you find that it's justified. The bill spells out a procedure for the for conferring with the drug manufacturers, and then it will be up to the court to determine if it's unreasonable. Is that your understanding of the process?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Long, I think just to emphasize the other path, too, is sometimes it doesn't result in litigation. Settlement happens quickly. So that's a third outcome that I don't want to minimize.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in both a settlement or in before a court, you anticipate that you could recover attorney's fees for some of that time or reimbursement for the expenses that you've incurred.
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Long. Yes, in a settlement, that would be part of the negotiation. And in, you know, a court order, that would be determined by the judge what was reasonable.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the commend the Attorney General on pulling together that task force. It's an important effort to look broadly at the at this issue, which we know is affecting a number of Minnesotans. But according to this fiscal note, we know right now that there are price increases on drugs that are 15% or more that are happening every year. And it's does it feel appropriate to you to investigate those if the information is being provided to you by the drug companies currently?
Mr. Smith.
Agrees.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a question on the wage theft fiscal note. The assumption is for two FTEs for the office. And so presumably this is because there will be additional wage theft violations that are coming to the Attorney General's office from the increase in investigations that will be conducted under the bill. Is that right?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Long. Yes, I mean, I think the you know, looking at the Department of Labor and Industries fiscal note, they talk about the number of complaints that they receive in great detail. And, you know, based on what they were telling us, we estimated that it would be two attorneys and two investigators with a support staff person built in there, so five FTEs. Clarify.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, so this note is to reflect that there are violations of law that are not being caught right now that Dolly believes will be caught if they have additional enforcement and that will need to be enforced. So just to point that out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Green, and just members to know, we're going to adjourn at 9:45 because we have to be in session at 10 o'clock. So, So Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my questions will be quick. I only have a couple. Something that you said as far as how you're going to look into this, and you don't really know what you might be looking for, but do you have any criteria set? So, for lack of a better word, I guess, a rubrics which you're going to go by, that when you start looking into the drug prices, so that you can look in and not take everyone individually? Are you going to take everyone in individually and say, we don't think? Or is there going to be some kind of a guideline that you go by?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Green. Again, I think going back to my experience being an investigator, kind of in the utility matter, you know, if this law were passed and, you know, I was the investigator hired to do it, sort of what would I be doing on day one is recognizing that this isn't happening in a vacuum. Drug price investigations, you know, kind of are going on and looked at in other places. And so I, you know, kind of see what's been going on and what's been found in other places to kind of look at it. But at the end of the day, it's what the law you passed says and the facts that are before us that determine whether there's a violation or not. It's not what I think is right as the investigator.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, the next question, I'll give you a couple of examples of why I'm asking the question. And the one is kind of what we were talking about just now, is what will the investigations encompass? And the reason that I ask is that I'll give you an example in my own life. My wife has asthma, and she's been on inhalers for a very long time. And for years, we were paying $35 per inhaler. And through, I believe, the EPA, they passed a rule that omitted some of the medicines that were in the inhaler because they were damaging to the environment. And as a result, those inhalers jumped almost automatically to $150. And now I think we're paying close to $300 for those inhalers. Now, when you do your investigations, are you going to be looking at those kind of things? And if you are, and this is something that I would really love to see, are you going to be issuing a report onto your findings onto some of these so that we can look at it and say, you know, is this a result of just greed, which I know there is greed, but or is this a result of government regulations that have forced these into existence? And then one other question that I'll ask at the same time, and then I'll be done, is, you know, we hear all the time that we can jump across the border and get these medications way cheaper. So on that aspect, are they cheaper in other countries because they don't have the stringent rules that we have? And also, do you believe, this is a tough one, do you believe that Americans, because we are a more wealthy nation and have a lot of subsidies for health care, that we may be ending up subsidizing other countries for their cheap drugs, and the drug companies are looking at us to make up the difference?
Mr. Smith. Nice easy question he had there, yeah.
Representative Greed, I did my best to kind of take notes, and I think, again, I'd kind of refer you back to my experience doing kind of the utility work, where the legislature has passed laws that rates must be reasonable and affordable. In the course of that investigation, utilities, as a matter of course, would explain the reasons for price increase that they were proposing and make the kinds of arguments that I think you are saying we should expect to receive with regard to the inhaler drugs. And from my experience in the course of investigation, if the other side makes reasonable arguments, you know, the investigation concludes. If the other side doesn't have reasonable arguments, that's when the cases go forward. With regard to the second area of questions in terms of kind of drug prices in other countries and subsidizing, you know, innovation in healthcare worldwide, as an economist, that's a really intriguing question, but I don't think I'm the best person to opine on that. Maybe over a cup of coffee, and not as a representative, as the Attorney General, I could.
And I know years ago, about 20 years ago, my mother was grousing about the fact that how the price of medicine was going up and the price of doctors was going up, and she was a nurse, and talked about how back in the late 50s and 60s, when a lot of people didn't have health insurance, doctors made about what a little higher priced tradesperson made. And then when they started getting insurance and being paid through a third party, and people never saw the bills, how the fact that the cost of medicine seemed to skyrocket through the roof because no one knew what they were paying. I have insurance, I go to the doctor, it gets paid. Where when they were paying it by themselves, that it kind of kept a cap on those prices going up. So, I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal information we can find out there, and hopefully this bill will help put a cap on some of the insurance costs. Representative Green, are you done? Or?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I'm trying to figure out now, so the Attorney General is going to hire 5 FTEs and basically then prosecute these, or investigate and prosecute the cases. So there will be some fine revenue, I would assume. Otherwise, probably it wasn't a good idea to be investigating in the first place. And that will go into the general fund?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel, this is the wage theft bill, just to confirm we're
I'm sorry, yes, this is on HF6. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
One of the distinguishing factors between the bills, and there's obviously others, clearly, is in the unconscionable drug prices, that's sort of Attorney General authority to investigate. In the labor and industry angle, those fees, as I understand it, will go into the general fund, but they'll be done by the client. It won't be done by the Attorney General. Does that make sense? The Department of Labor and Industry is the one that's estimating the recovery of the revenue from the cases.
So, Mr. Smith, the fines would be then leveled by the Department of Labor and Industry and paid directly into the general fund where they go, as opposed to going through the Attorney General's office through a settlement.
Correct.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Smith. So, on page 18 of the fiscal notice says that there's going to be 2 FTEs to investigate, 2 to litigate, and 1 clerical. And that's where I was wondering, okay, so we're going to have 5 more people working. I would assume that they're going to do something and there's a need to have them there, and if there is a need to have them there, there's going to be some settlements. So those settlements then go into the general fund?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel, I believe the answer is yes. The resolution of the cases that result in fines, the money is deposited in the general fund. The technicality is who brings it to the bank? In the drug pricing bill, we bring it to the bank. In this case, I think Dolly brings it to the bank. So it's in their fiscal note and not in ours. But consolidated, it's one pile of money, and the net costs and revenues balance the way they do on page one.
And members, it's my understanding that all fines and fees and things like that go directly, we were set up at the state, is that go into the general fund. Any settlements that we get go into the general fund. They don't stay within the agencies that collect them. There's a term they call kill what you eat, where you keep that, but we don't use that as a philosophy in our state. It goes all into the general fund, and it's part of the whole general fund going forward. Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So going back then to page 9 and looking at the revenue that comes in as a result of whether it's CAG doing it or Dolly or not, Office Administrative Hearing, I guess, has got their own revenue source. But, you know, I'm looking there. It says citation penalties, $163 at $1,000, so it's $163,000. Record penalties, it's a $75,000, which go back into fiscal notice for 15 of them. So basically what I'm seeing here is that there's going to be 175 anticipated violations that would produce fine revenue, whether you're doing it or the Dolly is doing it.
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Vogel. It appears to me that's what Dolly is estimating in their fiscal note on page 9, yes.
Mr. Representative Vogel.
So, Mr. Chair, my concern becomes that we're adding 18 FTEs through this whole process, whether it's Dolly or Attorney General. There's going to be 175 violations. So basically, that's less than, you know, 10 per new FTE. And my concern is that if you're a small employer and looking at some of the things in this bill that are fairly subjective, especially when it comes to record keeping, that the employer cost is going to be far more to defend themselves as we get into these actions with 18 FTEs, looking at only 10 potential real violations where there is a fine a year. So that's my question, I guess, is I'm not so sure. I know we can't go into the Dolly thing because we're not in front of that's not in front of us, but the AG adding another, you know, five people in addition, it just seems a little bit high relative to what's maybe going on. And that is not to say that wage theft is in any way should be tolerated. My concern is, are we taking a tank against these small business owners that may happen to have some record keeping issues but are going to have to defend themselves through this thing? Because you're looking at a lot of employees for not a lot of proposed settlements, and the settlements to me would be the bad actors, the ones that are actually doing stuff. So I know it's not in the form of a question, but I really think that when we do this stuff, we have to look at this, because if you're a small employer and you have to spend $300-$500 an hour for defense relative to what's going on here, we're going to pick this up as taxpayers, and we're saying that it's going to cost us $2.2 million a year. Well, it's also going to cost a lot of innocent small employers that are going to have to defend themselves a lot of money, because the expected citations here are nowhere near what the number of cases are. And that's the reason, Mr. Chair, I really have some concerns with all of these FTEs, that we're just bringing too many people in to go after too many people that may be doing things that are a mistake but not an intentional act to hurt somebody.
Well, Mr. Chair, or Representative Vogel, and I think from my dealings in the past and my previous work experience and things that I've worked on in the legislature here having to do with wage theft, the idea is not to go after the small employer that makes an innocent mistake that's not the one they're going after, but it's like the gentleman they caught last year that was a labor broker that was multiple offenses and multiple people that he was ripping off on their wages. And in every one of these people, the 175 cases, if there are multiple people that have lost their wages, that's multiple people in the settlement will get their wages paid that they should have been paid, and get some of these bad actors out of the pool, I guess is the best way to say it. So the next person I have on those is Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Smith, I'm going to just refer to a couple questions on the House File 6. And just for my own information, on an annual basis, how many cases are referred to the AG's office from Dolly of a significant nature where the Department of Labor and Industry feels like the Attorney General should investigate and prosecute? What is there a threshold, or what is done by Dolly administratively through their processes that they can handle that doesn't require the AG's office being involved? Where is that line, and how many have you seen in the last year where the Dolly really said, no, the AG should look at this, and it's beyond the scope of what we can do?
Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright, I can't speak to the volume of cases that Dolly refers to us in the past. I can speak to what they estimate for these particular bills for the new authority that's granted with respect to the fiscal note, if that's where you want to go. To try to be somewhat responsive, we represent over 100 agencies, boards, commissions. I don't think that Dolly is kind of in the top five of the demanders of our service, but I wouldn't consider them a small client. Is that helpful at all?
Representative Albright.
Yes. Thank you. That is helpful. Because I look at page 6 of 21 on the fiscal note, and it pertains to, you know, what Dolly already talks about in terms of, you know, enforcement of the Fair Labor Standards Act, 20,000 inquiries, addressing about 1,300 claims, bringing about 14 cases per year, and also 920 employee complaints. If you look at, you know, in the narrative of the bill itself, what we're really doing is, amongst other things, we're enhancing the statute with regard to going, I think, from 31 to 16 days for payroll. An obligation to provide information about what's being deducted, paid sick leave, vacation time, that type of thing. And to the chair's point about really addressing some of the more egregious instances, would you expect that those types of changes in the law are going to increase the volume? Obviously, you have, because the fiscal note says that you need more people. But is it what is the nature of cases that come to you with regard to wage theft? Is it to the chair's reference about larger intentional actions, or is it more of an administrative thing where they don't find that they should have to, you know, absorb the cost to go from a monthly payroll to a biweekly payroll? Where is that line in terms of an administrative, more civil disagreement as opposed to more of a criminal act?
Mr. Smith, and I think this gets into how the Attorney General manages, is going to have to manage the office, and I think we had a discussion the other day when we had the 1935 in front of us about that. I think I made the remark about the Mr. Nobles, when we add more stuff onto his plate, he says, well, I have to manage what I can do, when there's some things I have to make just choices on what ones I go after. And Mr. Smith.
Chair Nelson, Representative Albright. I'll try to phrase the question as at least the first part that I think I understood. The changes in the law can it lead to increased enforcement, changes in behavior by Dolly, or the complaints that come before them can lead to increased enforcement. And you're asking kind of to parse out those components. And I think the challenge is I don't kind of have the detail on the current level to give you that breakout today. I think, you know, we view this as an area that is an important area to have additional enforcement, law change or not. Is that helpful?
Mr. Smith, thank you. And,
so
and
this is the last question.
Yes, exactly.
We're wrapping.
We're going to wrap up here. I appreciate you coming in today. And the intentionality of the questions really was not to diminish the import of your office in any way, shape, or form, but really to appreciate the kind of the interlinkage between the various agencies and who's responsible for what. But I think in a larger sense, as we've seen, Mr. Chair, you know, and my final conclusion is the purpose that the lead on this really wanted to probe is here we have a budget for one department, but it's receiving revenue from several different other departments. And that's a narrative that is difficult to follow I started out with on the unconscionable fiscal note. Not that the fiscal note is unconscionable, but that I'm just using that for the name of the bill, where we've got about a $214,000 gap in terms of where it's coming from. Is it coming from HHS? Is it coming from the general fund? Is it part of the overall Attorney General's budget? I don't know that we still know where that $214,000 is coming from. It's got to come from someplace. But in the essence of time, I recognize we have to be on the floor shortly. I appreciate the candor, appreciate the desire to respond and engage. I think it's important that, as a kind of a final comment, that these issues come to us in a more timely fashion. And I understand the traveling of bills very enough. But the fiscal notes themselves need to convey the absolute rock, the bottom line costs for agencies and for departments and for constitutional officers. And where is it coming from? Because we are the arbiter of the purse strings for the government. So appreciate the audience with the AG's office this morning. Appreciate their opportunity to reflect on these. And with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smith, for your time, and thank you for your answers and for the clarity that you've given to us.
Thank you, Charles.
And with that, members, we're adjourned.